I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Alder and I'm joined today by Adam Elliott. Adam, how are you?
Alder, remind me what year this is.
It's 2024.
It doesn't feel like it. It feels like 2022 again. It's a bit of a weird one. I can't really put my finger on why, but I'm good, mate. Yeah, it's good to see you again. Been a long time, a whole 24 hours. But yeah, I'm fantastic. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I think I'm feeling good because we've got an extra guest here today, haven't we, Adam?
Indeed. This is why it feels a bit weird, a bit nostalgic.
Yeah, so obviously we're here today to talk about Chelsea, who we play in the FA Cup on Wednesday evening. Now, we don't have a Chelsea fan to discuss this one, but we do have someone who we think can do an all right job at giving us the lowdown on Chelsea. So I'm happy to say it's Tifo Football, The Athletics, and the Totally Football Show's John McKenzie. John, how are you?
Hello. It's weird being back on. I'm glad that you still use that absolutely awful intro that I wrote 5 years ago.
I think I kind of love it, and I think everyone else loves it.
And I know it off by heart now. It's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, doing really well, and looking forward to chatting to you guys about Chelsea in particular.
Yeah, when I was reading out that introduction then, it was a bit like, you know, when you pass your driving test and then you drive your parents around for the first time. That was like me doing the introduction to you then, because it was after all the years of you doing it to me. Let's get into it then, because I guess for some Leeds fans, they probably don't watch the Premier League when Leeds aren't in it. Some probably still do, and some probably just only watch Leeds games. So it'd be quite good to have someone like yourself, John, who watches a fair amount of Chelsea and give us the lowdown on them. So could you start by letting us just know how the season has been for Chelsea and what changed from the season before?
Yeah, I mean, it's not been a great season for Chelsea, I'd say, in general. They're very much not in any kind of title race, which I think was maybe not the expectation, but I think a lot of people thought they would have been challenging for the European spots at the very least this season, but instead they find themselves in the mid-table. Obviously, the whole context behind Chelsea is that they have become the sort of project of a big hedge fund in London, in America, who've pumped a lot of money in, had some pretty interesting approaches to player contracts, and they've tried to bring in a lot of high-end young talent to try and challenge at the very top of the Premier League, and it hasn't really gone particularly well this season. So in terms of the season so far, they're very much mid-table. Their underlying numbers suggest that they're better than their table position suggests, but I think there's some interesting counter arguments to that, which we can get into in a little bit. They've just lost in the final of the Carabao Cup, which I think is interesting, because their season's very much now based around what they can achieve domestically. So they will still be taking the FA Cup seriously, you would have thought, with nothing else really to play for at their end. But yeah, I think a really interesting team to get into, because their coach is Mauricio Pochettino. And I think there's certain things about what he's doing in terms of what he's getting the team to do in and out of possession that actually strikes me as being maybe a little bit outdated as well. So there's questions about whether or not he's able to get the most out of the players that he has at his disposal as well. So that's a sort of broad brushstroke picture of where Chelsea are at right now.
And I guess what about more recently? What is there anything that's changed sort of in the last few weeks? Obviously, there's the obvious one, like you said, of the EFL Cup final. But is there anything else sort of that's changed at Chelsea recently?
I wouldn't say necessarily there's been a huge amount that's changed in terms of what they're doing with personnel. They've had injuries as every Premier League team has, but they're still playing the same sorts of structure in and out of possession. You're still seeing a lot of the same problems in and out of possession as well. That we've, to be fair to Pochettino, that we've seen across a number of seasons now with Chelsea. So, yeah, one of the things that sort of stands out to me whenever I talk about Chelsea is it does feel as though they're very much in the sort of cycle of trying to sort things out by bringing in more players or a new manager. And yet, despite that, we've now seen them go through Thomas Tuchel, Graham Potter, and Frank Lampard as well as Pochettino. And yes, to varying degrees, they were more or less successful at various periods. Obviously, Thomas Tuchel was very successful at the beginning, but by the end, everything sort of started feeling very much the same. And they put Potter in, put Lampard in, they brought Pochettino in, and it's still the same old story. So big questions about how you turn that team around and bring them into this reality where they're able to challenge at the top of the table. So a lot of it does come down to what's going on behind the scenes and the sort of unusual approach that Chelsea have had at squad building and team management, as well as what's going on on the training ground as well.
Let's get into the details of it a bit more then. So, because you said that Poch maybe isn't getting the best out of the squad that he's got. So how is he having Chelsea set up in possession, and is it working, basically?
Yeah, so Pochettino, as you may remember when he was coaching Spurs in the Premier League, he would use this, I suppose it's a sort of 4-2-3-1 shape, maybe a 4-3-3 shape that can become lots of different things in different phases. But often what you'd see when it was Spurs was you'd see Eric Dier dropping it as one of the midfielders, dropping in between the two centre-backs to allow them to push the full-backs quite high. And then you've got two midfielders, usually Christian Eriksen, dropping in to help in the build-up with Moussa Dembele. And then you had a really exciting front three ahead of him as well, in Dele Alli, Heung-Min Son and Harry Kane. And that sort of shape is what he's using now at Chelsea. So it's the same sort of idea. So back four, a flexible midfield three where you can do different things and build up to try and solve different problems if they arise. And then, yeah, some kind of iteration of a front three as well. So in terms of what they're trying to do in possession is they are trying to move the ball down the field in a sort of structured possessional sense. Depending on the opposition that they're coming up against, they will have different approaches. Again, there'll be quite a lot of flexibility week on week as to how they're going to try and achieve that ball progression. So Enzo Fernandez, it plays alongside Moises Caicedo in the midfield usually. Sometimes we'll see Enzo Fernandez maybe pushed further forward and have a different player deeper. So Conor Gallagher's been used there as well. Sometimes Conor Gallagher is used in the slightly further forward position, and Enzo is deeper. So that's tended to be the options that they've had in the central midfield area. And we've seen different things happening in build-up. So more recently, we've seen Moises Caicedo drop out into the back line in the same way that Eric Dier was doing for Spurs. I think the reasons for that are that you want to, you know, if you're coming up against a high press, you might want to give yourself more of a chance of retaining possession to move the ball down the field. And we also see Enzo Fernandez, to be honest, if he's playing a little bit deeper, sometimes dropping out into the wide areas as well. Again, just creating space for someone else to move into. So maybe Conor Gallagher or Cole Palmer, who often plays on the wide on the right, or even as a striker, he can often jump down and help with the build up as well. So that's how they're doing their structuring their deep build up, but. And they're pretty good in the deep build-up phases. They sometimes struggle against teams who are pretty aggressive at high press. But for the most part, they've been okay at getting through those high presses. Maybe some of the issues that we've started to see once they get through those early phases of the build-up is that you know, you then have to move into your attacking phase and move into the opposition's final third. And again, we're seeing some of the problems that have haunted a lot of recent coaches that Chelsea have had, which is it feels as though a lot of the time they can get out of the first few phases of possession, but when it comes to trying to generate dangerous chances, they're just not quick enough, and they allow the opposition to get into their structured defensive shapes because they're not moving the ball quickly enough. So yeah, they then have some of these issues where they're trying to they do generate a lot of chances because they do commit a lot of players forward into the box, but in so doing they also leave themselves quite exposed to teams on the break as well. So one thing that you'll see often, it feels like when I'm watching them anyway, is they get into this sort of settled possession in the opposition, in and around the opposition's third, and they'll be maybe on one side or the other. They're going to end up eventually slinging into the box, but they'll have committed, you know, six players into the front line to try and get a dangerous chance from it. They'll sling the ball into the box, and then they've got the one of the midfielders who's presumably wide trying to get the ball in, or one of the wide players, and then a massive space between their defensive line and the attacking forward line. So if the chance isn't generated, then oppositions that are really good at exploiting space are going to be able to counterattack on them as well. So yeah, those are a couple of the problems that I would say that they have in possession in particular. Maybe a little bit too slow. If they build up through the first few phases quite slowly, they can often struggle to break teams down, and often in trying to break those teams down, they leave themselves quite exposed in terms of what tacticians will call rest defence. So rest defence is just the idea of when you're attacking, what kind of defensive measures are you taking to make sure that if you lose the ball, you're not going to be completely open. That said, in possession, one of the things I think they're very good at is when they come up against some of these elite teams who are trying to do the same thing that Chelsea are trying to do to teams, which is force them back into their final, into their own third and generate, you know, a volume of chances. Chelsea are really good at actually doing quite quick one-touch passing to move the ball through a high press and then hitting the channels, trying to get overloads in that way. So if you've watched them play against Man City, if you saw them play against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup final, we saw that happening quite a lot. So lots of, I would say, quite unstructured build-up, where you almost have like a rondo of players who are moving the ball around quickly in order to try and get through the first few lines of the opposition pressure, then get the ball through that pressure and hit the space, usually in behind fullbacks or wingbacks, depending on who they're playing. And how many times have we seen them running down? You get someone like Cole Palmer running down the wing, Malagusta running down the wing, and then working these overloads at the far post, where you've got Raheem Sterling running in or Mikhailo Mudryk running in with not a huge amount of defensive pressure from the opposition as well. So that's the areas when they can be quite dangerous, when they're coming up against teams who are going to commit a high press on them when they're trying to build up. And they'll be able to often, work these rondos, move the ball quickly down the field. They often play in quite diagonal lines as well, because that helps them hit those wide channels as well, and they can be quite dangerous from there. But I think against any team who's going to be maybe a little bit more conservative, as we said, they're going to maybe struggle a little bit to break them down. And so, yeah, teams who are going to be quite dangerous in transition, think Leeds United, I think will potentially have some joy in being able to sit a little bit deeper, absorb pressure, win the ball back, and then hit on the counter-attack.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about Chelsea probably doing better against the better teams and maybe struggling against lower teams, because from my limited watching of Chelsea this year, that was probably what I would say as well. My next question, you kind of alluded to at the end of your answer there about how you might see them doing against Leeds. So I don't think Leeds are going to approach the game on Wednesday sitting in a low block, but they'll probably, that Chelsea will dominate the ball in this game and Leeds will hit them in transition. So do you see, I guess, from your first answer, maybe that this will play into Chelsea's hands a little bit, but also there will be chances for Leeds from that perspective?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Chelsea have very good players, so they can always hurt you. And there's a reason why they've got good underlying numbers. Yes, they've had finishing issues this season. They've generated a lot of chances there, and they haven't scored to the level that you might expect them to. But they are still generating those chances, and they do have the sorts of players who can hurt you in those sorts of situations as well. So I'd say that the games that Chelsea have tended to struggle with have been in against teams where they're expected to win. We've seen them labour in a few games now. I'm thinking Middlesbrough. I mean, in the first leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final, where Middlesbrough were able to I think they won that game 1-0 in the end, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, there is the possibility that some of the deficiencies that Chelsea have will be able to be exploited by Leeds. And yeah, I think stylistically speaking, that's the way that Leeds are going to play is going to be one of the ways that Chelsea can be hurt. And we're going to go on to talk about some of the weaknesses that Chelsea have out of possession in a bit. But Liverpool in the Premier League game that they played before the Carabao Cup final won comfortably 4-1. And Liverpool were able to cause a lot of problems because Liverpool are a very direct team. They're not trying to build up slowly. They're quite unusual, I suppose, compared to a lot of other maybe elite sides these days who tend to be more patient or tend to prioritise safe possession over verticality and directness. And so they were able to find spaces in the Chelsea defensive structure. And, you know, if you play with speed against Chelsea, you can find those pockets of space and you can cause them a lot of problems.
What about the out-of-possession side for Chelsea then, John? Mm.
So generally out of possession, Chelsea will be defending in a 4-4-2 shape, which is what a lot of elite teams will do these days. And they tend to form that by pushing Conor Gallagher into the front line, or whoever's the number 10 into the front line in the 4-2-3-1, tends to be Conor Gallagher because he's an exceptional pressing player. And so you can get a huge amount of upside from having him in that front line. So he'll move up alongside the striker, and then you'll have the two wide players either side of them, two players in midfield, in usually Enzo Fernandez and Caicedo, as we said, and then the back four. They can be quite aggressive, I think, Chelsea, in terms of what they're pressing. And the way that I think that manifests is that they often jump their wide players up quite aggressively. And so you almost end up with a 4-2-4 shape, which is reminiscent to what we used to see under Jesse Marsh at Leeds. So people will know the potential weaknesses that will open up in that kind of pressing shape. The ones that sort of strike me are that there's two things. One of them is that there's not enough vertical compactness because they have their front line jumping up and the wingers jumping up, leaving, you know, okay, the far side winger maybe if you're pressing on one side, and then the two midfielders. But often, I mean, I'm thinking if you press with the right winger, if the right winger for Chelsea presses up, you've usually got Raheem Sterling on the other side, and he's not the most fastidious presser on the far side. And so sometimes it can feel as though the midfield two get a little bit isolated. And also, you're seeing a big line, a big gap opening up between the defensive line and the forward pressing unit. I guess Chelsea have been playing Thiago Silva a chunk this season. And I guess when you're as old as Thiago Silva, you don't want to commit to a super high line because you know that if the ball goes in behind you, you're going to have to get back. And that just increases the sort of distance between players in a press. And if you're doing an aggressive high press, the more distance there is to cover, the harder it is for you to enact your press. So it's one of those things where that lack of compactness in the Chelsea system means that it can be quite easy to find the space in between the lines, the space between the midfield and the defensive line as well. And often what you'll see teams doing, this is one thing that Liverpool did really well, just moving the ball side to side until they found the gap in between, the gaps in between the midfielders, and they were able to punch the ball through to someone sitting in the pockets of space, and then you're basically running directly at a back four, which can cause all kinds of problems for any team of any level. So, yeah, that's one of the things that I think really stands out. The other thing that stands out is they actually get very horizontally compact when they're pressing as well. So one of the things that you'd see happening for Liverpool in the 4-1 game is that they would try and build up on one side. They would invert Joe Gomez to give you better access to Luis Diaz. They pass out from the centre-back into Luis Diaz, and Chelsea would then squeeze right across onto that side of the pitch. Again, think the sorts of things we saw from Jesse Marsh. And then what you're seeing was Liverpool trying to hit the diagonal build-up to hit the fullback. It was Conor Bradley, I think, in that game. And the second goal came from Conor Bradley scoring directly. The third game goal came from Conor Bradley hitting Dominic Szoboszlai from another similar type of build-up, having a lot of space then to sort of gets fronted up against one of the centre-backs, gets around him, is able to cross the ball in, and Dominic Szoboszlai scores a header. So those are the two areas, I think, in particular that Chelsea can be quite vulnerable. If you can play quickly and you can bait their press in, play through it, you can hit those lines of space, the pockets of space between their midfield and their back line. And if you can break their press in on one side of the field, there's always routes, usually quite comfortable routes, to the other side of the field, which can then open up massive channels for fullbacks or wide forwards as well to really exploit. So, yeah, it feels as though the out of possession for them is a massive weakness, and we're seeing it exploited in lots of different ways by lots of different teams. So, yeah, I think that those will be areas that Leeds will be focusing on as it goes into the week, because I think there is possibility to cause Chelsea problems in that way.
Let's talk about the squad then. So, I normally ask which players good and bad do we need to look out for, but I guess in this case it's probably which players for Chelsea are good.
Yeah, and look, as I said at the beginning, like they all their players are very, very, very good players, and it's important not to confuse the difference between a group of players playing in a system that works for them and a group of players who are playing in a system that isn't getting the best out of them. And look, the way that washes out is that this is a team that is going to be, however they line up against Leeds, is going to be very good. They're going to have individuals who are going to be able to have moments which can hurt Leeds. And they, you know, they're it's not just that everything is abject. There are things that they are very good at. If they can find space in channels after having broken through lines of pressure, then they can be devastating. We've seen it time and time again. And yes, maybe they're not finishing as clinically as you would want them to if you were their coach, but they are still generating massive, massive chances, which some of which will go in. So yeah, the players to look out for, I suppose. I mean, I think that they're, in terms of their midfielders individually, they are very good. In terms of Conor Gallagher, Enzo Fernandez, Moises Caicedo. Now, Moises Caicedo has become a little bit of a laughing stock, I think, but again, I think the reason for that is because he's being left to cover so much space. He just gets exposed all the time because of Chelsea's out of possession structure. But yeah, Enzo Fernandez is a player who can generate incredible moments. Conor Gallagher is someone who's going to run all day long. He's going to put opposition players in build-up under a huge amount of pressure, and has the ability to box crash and score goals as well. Cole Palmer, an incredibly flexible player who can play out wide, can play up forward, up front, he can drop in and help out in the build-up as well, and is a very creative player. And then Raheem Sterling, everyone knows what he can do and how dangerous he can be in those break moments when you can get in behind. So yeah, there's plenty of players all the way across the field who are going to cause them problems. So even like Malagosto, who's technically their backup right back, an incredibly creative player, has an incredible ability on the ball, can get into these advanced areas and generate dangerous crosses. And then they have hundreds and hundreds of really very good centre backs as well. And we've got Jordi Petrovic in goal as well. An incredible shot stopper. So, you know, they don't have really any weaknesses in terms of the individuals. It's how it all comes out in the wash as they play as a collective that is going to be interesting. And so, yeah, easy to maybe dismiss Chelsea, but I think in terms of the players that they have on the field, it goes a big way towards them being a very tough opponent.
Yeah, we saw it quite a lot in the Premier League with Leeds, didn't we, that perhaps we'd come up against teams that weren't that good tactically, but all it took is one moment and suddenly they've scored or they've created a chance. So yeah, it's easy to say, Leeds have been dominant in the Championship, they'll give Chelsea a go here, but it'll take one Chelsea moment from one of their great players, and that's all it'll take, really. Adam, I know you watch quite a bit of the Premier League and Chelsea, so is there any other players you want to point out here or anything else you want to build from what John said so far?
Well, I have a mate that's a big Chelsea fan, and I did sort of ask him like for a few opinions on a few guys. John's already mentioned a couple. I was going to go into a bit of detail on Conor Gallagher being one, and his box crashing ability being a particularly difficult thing for us to have to pick up. And I think in terms of our own rest defence and what we do when we go forward, and watching out for him, because he's such an impressive player in transition, and so are some of their other wide forwards as well. But he's one that I think we need maybe to give a little bit extra sort of responsibility to, in terms of Ampadu, Gourev, Kamara, those sorts of players, and what they're doing and what they're thinking about with regards to him. A few others as well. He mentioned Thiago Silva, who's not going to play in this game because he's injured, but he basically said that this season he looks like he has showed signs of slowing down a little bit. We were at that game at Stamford Bridge a few years back, Toldo, when we had Bielsa, and it just seemed like he had so much time on the ball, and he seems to slow the game down quite a lot. And I think that the thing that my friend was mentioning was that that's maybe not suited to how Pochettino wants to play, and that Cobble and De Sassi have been a lot more impressive this season in getting the ball into the pivot players for them to build up, or actually into the half spaces with the wide forwards like Palmer and Sterling, who are so devastating in those areas when they get the ball. So there are a few areas that they're maybe not as strong as well in terms of, I think, I know that John said that they have a lot of good players, but Jackson is an interesting striker for me. He obviously isn't the best goal scorer. He kind of is a bit purple patchy at the moment. That maybe is a part of it is his age, but he's not always the best finisher when it comes to taking chances, but at the same time he will pull players wide and drag players around, and he's a good outlet in that sense, and he has good dribbling and ball carrying ability when you watch him, and he's quite an intense player in that regard. And I think they've got quite a few guys like that, Sterling and Palmer as well. So there's quite a lot of areas which I think obviously we should be concerned about, but there are also some things I'd like us to sort of take advantage of that John's already been in getting at. And I think the big one, just the last point for me, is how aggressive their fullbacks can be. It's a bit of a shame that Somerville might be injured actually and might not play in the game, because you called it outdated, John, and basically Gusto and Chilwell, if they are the two that play, quite often are, you know, caught quite high, quite wide, and they make the pitch quite big so that you can get those switch balls on potentially and get behind them. I think it's definitely a possibility because of how aggressive they are, and I think that's why teams have had a lot of joy against them in that regard this season as well.
Adam, you've had a look at Chelsea's data so far this season, so what have you seen in that?
Yeah, John's alluded to it, but I'm doing the Martin job today, so I've got to do this. But yes, per Understat, they are 6th for XG and 7th for expected goals against, which puts them 7th in the expected points table overall, and I think they're currently 10th or 11th at the time of recording, I believe. Their expected goal difference on FBref is 9, so all of that's kind of somewhat positive, I guess. But the main thing, I think, for a Chelsea perspective for this game and kind of the season in general, is that the Opta supercomputer I read had they've given them an 18.2% chance of finishing in the top 7. And even though their underlyings are pretty good, or not pretty good, but like decent, it doesn't seem like that's a very high chance. So maybe the FA Cup might be their best route now into Europe. I think obviously the League Cup final was the best chance, but now that's probably now going to be their best opportunity of getting into Europe. And obviously it's silverware as well, and a club of Chelsea's size and stature probably need to be winning that as much as possible. And then I'll just quickly give another nod to Martin, because he always looks at the data in terms of set piece XG, and they have the 9th best in the Premier League, which is not particularly strong, as sort of middle of the road.
What about Chelsea injuries ahead of this game, Adam?
Well, they've actually got quite a lot. They have actually had the I haven't got a really up-to-date version of this, but I looked up the injury table as recently as I could get it, and it was mid-January, and at that time they were 5th in the overall Premier League rankings for that. So that has continued since as well, as far as I'm aware. So they still have quite a lot of players missing out through injury. Marco Correa's apparently back in training soon, but he's going to miss the game. Thiago Silva, Benoit Badiashil, but as John mentioned, they've got an absolute abundance of centre-backs, so I don't think that's particularly too much of an issue. Kani Chukwuemeka, who probably would have played in this game because he is a fantastic young midfielder, he might have actually got some minutes. He's actually injured as well. And then Romeo Lavia, Wesley Fofana, Reece James, and Leslie Ugochukwu, I think that's how you say it, they're all out of the game. And a few of them, again, are players maybe that would have been involved because they're young players that need a few more chances, but they're all long-term injuries as well. So yeah, they have quite a long injury list, and I was looking at it compared to ours, and I was quite surprised pleasantly that it's actually a little bit longer than ours, so that's nice.
Before we let you go, John, could you give us your best guess at a lineup for this game? I guess it's difficult since they played 120 minutes on Sunday and it's a FA Cup game.
Yeah, I've had a look through some of their other cup lineups, and they've tended to go for pretty strong squads. So even the game that they beat Preston North End 4-0 in, they still had a pretty strong squad. They had Armando Broya up front, who's no longer playing for them, so they'll have to find someone to play that striker role. They did play Mikhailo Mudryk as the left winger in that game, and again, he's out of favour and has become a bit of a laughing stock. But again, this is a player who they paid a lot of money for, and has an incredible ability in transition, has shown that in various leagues. Maybe not quite so effective as he was in the Premier League now. But again, coming up against a Championship side, you'll know that if you give him any space, he will exploit that space. So I expect he'll probably start. Cole Palmer started in that game, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him playing. Raheem Sterling started in that game. Wouldn't be surprised to see him. And then they had Caicedo and Fernandez in that game as well. So, yeah, depending on how the Carabao Cup result sort of hangs over the players, they may feel a slightly weaker starting 11. But I think, as we've already said, this is now their remaining possibility for getting silverware this season. So it may be that they still go for this in a bid to try and get something. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see a fairly strong starting 11 coming out here. They don't have a huge amount of options beyond that in terms of players who could come in. So maybe Noni Madueke might start this one. They've been playing Malagusto a fair amount, but they played Alfie Gilchrist in this game, who's a youngster that they have. Actually played Malagusto on the other side. But yeah, I expect that one of Malagusto or Ben Chilwell will probably have to start, given that they don't have a huge amount of options beyond that. And then, yeah, they've got De Zarzi playing in this game and Levi Colwill. I imagine Colwill will play. And yeah, I don't see why De Zarzi wouldn't start either. So I can see them playing a pretty strong lineup here, to be honest. They don't have European competition, so it's, you know, yes, they've had a long cup final on the Sunday, but they should be able to come out, I think, and still play a fairly strong 11 midway through this week. So yeah, I'm afraid I don't have a huge amount of optimism that this will be a wildly weakened squad.
Unfortunately, John, I've got to let you go, but thanks for coming on chatting Chelsea with us.
Yeah, it's been great to be back, and anytime I can be useful, do get me back on.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can get you on a bit sooner this time. Maybe when we're in the Premier League, you can come on and talk about some teams, more teams for us.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys.
Cheers, John.
Cheers, John.
See you soon. Before we move on to the Leeds analysis, we're going to go for a quick ad break. But first, a little more about our Patreon. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators you enjoy, such as us, and you get extra content in return. Our patrons get access for as little as £1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you are listening to now, analysis articles, videos, and bonus pods. We have 3 tiers in total on our Patreon. So, Adam, do you want to run us through those ones?
Yep, so we got the Berardi tier, which is at £1.99. That's the most basic tier. That gets you ad-free podcasts. Then we have the Click tier, which is £3.99, which gets you ad-free podcasts, early access to the preview pods where possible, and then the Pablo tier, which gives you all of the benefits that Toldo just went through for £4.99 a month. So I would definitely go with that one. That would be the best one for you.
And if they want to find the website for the Patreon, Adam, where can they find that?
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Let's move on to the Leeds analysis now then. So, injuries, quite a lot of them, isn't there, Adam?
Yeah, well, kind of a weird lucky one from us, because we've managed to record this podcast after Daniel Farke's presser, which doesn't happen all that often, but it happened today at lunchtime. And I think all of us shat ourselves a little bit, but, well, maybe me the most, but I think it should be okay. It's just that we've obviously got the long-term injuries of Dallas and Strouk still. That's not changed. And then short-term wise, we have Jorginho Rutter, Crescencio Somerville and Patrick Bamford, who are the three that are sort of major doubts for the game. There's a chance they could be involved, but I don't know. And then Dan James has a bruise on his foot, I believe, which means he should be fine, but Daniel Farke did mention it just in case. And then Sam Byram is the one that is actually returning, so that's at least some good news, and he should get some minutes, but I don't think he'll probably start the game.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping these short-term injuries are justifications to drop the players, yeah, and then magically reappear at 12:30 on Saturday in Huddersfield, which I know we've probably had this debate more in our podcast, in our group chat, about which players do you rest, which players do you play in a FA Cup. But I can kind of get why we're leaning towards going against playing these big players in this one. When you look at, like, we're playing Huddersfield 12:30 on Saturday, then Stoke on Tuesday, and then Sheffield Wednesday the following Friday. So as much as it pains me, because I would quite like us to win this and keep going in the FA Cup, I can get why we would defer on these players in this situation.
Yeah, three championship games in 6 days is pretty mental. And I think Daniel Farke sounded pretty pissed off about the fact that we have to play at 12:30 on Saturday as well. Just another thing, like, he just got a bit wound up by that. So yeah, it is a mad schedule, so I understand that as well. I'm hoping you're right.
Yeah, it's very Klopp, isn't it? But I do get it.
You don't want to throw the FA Cup, right? You actually want us to have a go at Chelsea and try and win.
Yeah, yeah. I want us to put out the best team we can in the game.
That isn't risking anyone.
Important. Yeah, so like, if that means that Rutter and Somerville don't play because they've got a knock, that's fine. I'm more than happy with that. I'd rather err on the side of caution with those players. It's more when they, like, would just give Somerville a rest because it's Chelsea. That would have annoyed me, but I get it otherwise. How do you think we'll approach this game in possession then, Adam? So I guess it's difficult to compare it to something else we've seen this season, because the only other team in the league, well, maybe the two teams in the league you could maybe see are even representative of this game are Leicester and Southampton. They're nowhere near the level of Chelsea, are they?
No, they're not. But they are the two probably closest games in terms of what it might look like. It's still going to be miles apart. It's interesting that we've had probably our hardest game of the season, and then we suddenly get one that's just that little bit harder in the next game against Chelsea. That's great. At the same time, I don't think... We've said this on this podcast so many times. Farke's not going to deviate too much from his normal ideas in terms of tactical approach in possession. He's going to try to dominate the ball where he can. It's just going to be a lot harder to do because Chelsea are a vastly superior team, both in terms of, well, mainly in terms of the technical quality of the players they've got. And I think that means that they will be able to keep the ball. And so we might be somewhat chasing shadows at times because it's just how it is. And yeah, you just have to manage the game in that sense. They'll be aware of that, but I don't think that Farke's going to try not to have the ball and to use it. I don't, like you mentioned in the first half of the pod, I don't foresee him sitting in a deep block and trying to soak up pressure and hit them on the break. That's just not really his style. It might make us come undone, but I just don't think that's going to be that likely. How about yourself?
For this one, yeah, I think a lot of it will be dependent on how Chelsea approach this game. I think I can't see us having maybe sustained possession like we do in a lot of championship games. I think it'll be more we'll get our joy through transition, which is fine. We're good in transition. That doesn't worry me at all. But I think, yeah, a lot of this will be how Chelsea approach this, which is like, it's very much back to last season. Like, we can't dictate it like we can in championship games. So, but yeah, if we just have to sort of sit, I don't think we're going to sit in and hit them on the break. But if our chances are through transition, that's fine for me. What about out of possession then, Adam? How do you think we will approach this one?
Yeah, this is obviously probably more interesting because they are going to dominate the ball more than likely for at least most of the game. Like you say, we might have a few periods here or there, but I think for the most part, they're going to have the ball. And yeah, it was interesting what John said, isn't it, about how they've dealt with a high press and the issues in that regard this season. Obviously, we have seen at times that we've ourselves initiated a pretty aggressive high press in terms of going man for man, I would feel abundantly more confident doing it if we had a player like Patrick Bamford playing, and I don't think it's likely that he's going to start if he is at all fit. So that's not going to be maybe as good as it should be, but I'm hoping Mateo Joseph gets another go because he is probably the most Bamford-like player. So in that regard, there's definitely a chance. Yeah, so that's just one thing. And then in terms of what we can do if we get the ball back quickly, if we do manage to win it in whatever area, whether that's high and then transition quickly, or if it's in our own deeper areas, it might be worth going a little bit more direct once we have won the ball back, I think, because of what we've mentioned about the fullbacks and how aggressive they are for Chelsea. They really do put both of them as high and wide as possible at times. So if we can basically win the ball back, bait them on a little bit, win the ball back, and then switch the ball out quickly, which is not something we've done a lot this season. Even if we've gone direct, we don't tend to switch ball out to the other side. But I know they'll be aware of this. I'm sure they will be. So hopefully they look to do that and to knock the ball out to one of the wingers. We do have decent pace in the team. Maybe Dan James starts. Maybe that would be a good outlet to have. So yeah, there's ways to get at them in that sense as well. If we can either bait them on through sort of deeper press, or if we can aggressively man mark high press, which the hybrid one that we've done this season. So I think there's a couple of approaches we could take and a couple of ways we can hurt them, and I think that is probably the better way of us creating chances this game rather than actual sustained pressure from ourselves and passing it around them.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards not doing the high press for what the reasons you said, with like Bamford not playing. I think I would prefer, and it's like, it's just better players, isn't it, on the ball. So I would probably lean towards mid-blocky sort of stuff that we've seen. But then again, like, that kind of concerns me as well. So maybe like you just situationally press, and I don't know how you define that. But like, I think they are to be got at if you press them. But I think they also have the ability just to play around us. I don't think our press is like that clever that it wouldn't be hard for them just to play around it. But at the same time, I definitely don't see it just going up with like a low block or like 10 men behind the ball and hitting them on the break. I think we will try and sort of push up out of our 18 yard line and have a go at them to an extent. What extent that is, I'm not too sure. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think it is going to be a bit situational like that.
Which players can you see having a bigger impact on the outcome of this game for Leeds then, Adam?
This is hard to answer because the go-tos may not be available. Basically, our three most attacking, like important attacking players could all well be out. And if they're not out, I don't expect them to start. So essentially, you're saying that Bamford, Routere and Somerville at best will be on the bench, in my view. So that means you're kind of left with the likes of Joseph, Anthony, Nonto in attack. I love Nonto and I think he's playing really well at the moment. So that's maybe one. I did mention James before. If he is fit enough to start, I think maybe we should, actually. And he should start on the right because he can at least stretch the pitch a little bit more. And we've talked about that quite a lot in the last two review pods of Plymouth and of Leicester. So that could be another good outlet for us. But yeah, I mentioned some stuff in the first half of the pod as well about our rest defence. I think Kamara, Gruev and Padu, those sorts of players are going to have to be so careful in how they handle the box crashing players that they have. And that's from various different angles. So Sterling from the left will come into the box when the ball's on the right. And then on the right, it'd be Palmer or Madueke that'll come in from the right and crash the box from there as well. So that's important. And then Gallagher. And they just have so much quality throughout the team. And I think people are quite low on Chelsea because of their league position for the last couple of years. But John's right. They have so much quality all over the pitch. I really hope that Ampadu plays, even though I'm a big advocate for resting him because of the amount of minutes he's played this season. But he's against his you know, former team and all that, and I do like that narrative. And I hope that he plays well and kind of shows them what they're missing, because it was pretty interesting that we got him for such a low fee. But the player I'm probably most concerned about in this game is Junior Firpo. So when he's coming up against any of their right-sided forwards, I'm pretty worried, to be honest. I'm kind of concerned about both fullbacks. That's where I'm looking at the most, where they might cause us quite a lot of damage with the overlapping fullbacks and the wingers coming inside. It's, you know, they could have quite a lot of opportunities to double up on one of our or both of our fullbacks at times. So that's concerning.
And what would your best guess be at a predicted lineup?
I guess you might differ slightly, and I hope you do actually, but I think it will still be Melier in goal. I can't see Klaassen getting a game, and I don't think Dalot's still 100%. I think he's almost back, but not quite. So he'll probably play. I think if Dalot was fit, he's our cup keeper, he probably would start, but he's not. So I think Conor Roberts is going to get a full debut. There's been quite a lot of talk about him and whether he's cup tied. He's not cup tied. Basically, for people that don't know, he didn't play for Burnley in their FA Cup games in January. And he also just wasn't registered in time to play in the FA Cup game against Plymouth, either earlier in this month or the end of last month or whatever. I think he might get a start here. I could see Gray getting rested. The centre-backs is a bit of a sticky one because I think there's a chance that they might play Cooper, but I'm not 100% convinced. I think it might still be Roden and Ampadu. Firpo will be at left-back, although I would like Byram to get at least a half of football, or very close to a half of football, at least 30 or 45 minutes. Kamara and Gruev, I can't see that changing. I think that's probably quite likely to persist. The wingers is probably the most interesting part. Anthony seems to be the go-to player in cup competition, so I think he will probably still get another game. But Nonto, will he come out and will he be rested, or will they play James there? Will Gellhart get a go at some stage? We obviously have seen him score at Stamford Bridge before, so I'd like him to maybe have some action here. I think the front two is probably set in stone, though. I don't know if you agree, but Joseph and Perreault probably is the most likely combination, with Perreault going back to being the sort of player behind the main centre forward, and Joseph will be up there as a bit of more of a focal point. And he'll have a tough game on his hands against the likes of De Zassi and Colwill, who are pretty big, strong guys.
Yeah, I realised I hadn't actually figured this out, because normally for a league game, you can just do it based on the last lineup. But I thought I should probably write down what might happen based on a few players being rested. So yeah, I think I agreed a fair amount. I had Melier in goal, Roberts at right back, Firpo at left back. I went for Rodon and Ampadu. I think he'll just stick with them. I went for Gruev and Kamara as well. And then I think it kind of gets tricky depending on how fit Dan James is to play. So if he's fit to play, to start a game, I think he will start it. And then, yeah, probably Anthony. I just think if you drop Nonto, though, you're kind of taking almost all the firepower out of the team, aren't you? Or that out of that front four. So that's where I was. I think Nonto plays and Pirro plays. And so then it's kind of like, does Joseph start or does Anthony start? I don't know. Is the answer. Like, so I would kind of like to see Nonto behind a striker.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Are you thinking maybe Perreault does play up front and then Nonto, Anthony and James are all behind Pim? Perhaps?
Yeah, I'm leaning that way because I think, I don't know, throwing in Joseph away at Chelsea, I guess you want to give him experience, but is it the right experience? I don't know. So if I was to guess, I would say James on the right, Anthony on the left, Nonto behind Pirro. I'd quite like to see that. I think that's the best case scenario you get with the players injured that at the moment. And I think it gives us the best chance to win the game. So that's what I'd like to see, whether we see that. I don't know. Let's move on to our more general questions about the game then. So what do you expect watching this game of football will look like, Adam?
I'm a little bit concerned because of the injury issues, and I don't think we're going to have a super strong bench to make changes if we do start going 2 and 3 goals behind. Obviously, I want to be positive and say that we can get something, especially because you look at a team like Middlesbrough this season, and even teams down the bottom end of the Premier League at times have given them a decent game, and I think we're at least as good as 2 or 3 teams down the bottom end of the Premier League, so there's no reason why we couldn't. But I just think it's more of our attacking sort of dynamics, and looking at that, and I'm a little bit concerned. So I think they're probably going to dominate the ball and look to play through us. I don't think we're going to be sat too deep. It'd be kind of mid-blocky, like you say. And I think that they'll probably just look to make openings where they can. They do have such quality in certain areas of midfielders. I think Enzo Fernandez is an absolute brilliant footballer. So it might just be about them being patient and then us trying to transition quickly where we can. And then when we do actually get the ball and we can't transition, at least try and retain possession and build from there. And I think we'll have some spells where we can do that, but it's just not going to be... It's going to be few and far between, whereas they're probably going to have maybe like 60% of the ball here and look to break us down. Also, I did note, and I didn't actually say it in the opening section, but one of the statistics was quite interesting just in regards to our approach and the way that Chelsea might transition on us, is that they have had at least 28 more shots in transition than any other team in the Premier League this season, also ranking well clear of everyone else for transitions reaching the final third in 486 times and transitions reaching the penalty area 223 times. So they are actually an absolutely devastating team in transition. So if we do have a period of sort of settled possession and we're kind of making our way into their half, you've got to be very, very wary of what they could do in terms of hitting us on the break. So although I've said they're going to be passing it around and patient, there's also probably a good chance that they might get their best chances through transition.
Yeah, I saw it the same way. I think they will dominate the ball. It depends how strong the lineup they go for. That if they have their irregular players, they'll probably just look like they're dominating possession and probably cutting us open a little bit, I'm going to say. But yeah, we'll be able to hit them in transition. And I do think we'll have chances. It's a shame that we haven't got Rutter and Somerville in there to do that, but I think the players that will play will still have chances in this game. But yeah, I think it might be a difficult watch from a Leeds perspective, I'm feeling, for this one. I'm not looking forward to it as much as I was doing when I found out about those injuries, put it that way.
Yeah, same.
Final question as always then, Adam, so where do you think this game will be won or lost?
Yeah, I'm not going to predict a scoreline because we don't do that on this podcast. But yeah, I think it's going to be a case of can we deal with them in terms of when they're trying to break us down, and can we transition quickly when we get those moments, whether that's a switch ball out to a flank or whether it's just some pretty quick passing and carrying in midfield. Kamara's pretty good at that. So can we make the most of those moments when they do come? I obviously note what you said about Somerville and Rutter. When they're not here, it is more concerning. And they are obviously our best two attackers, let alone transitional attackers, but they're particularly good in that regard. So not having them is a blow. But I still think there's a way that Nonto and Anthony and James and those sorts of players can make something happen. I wouldn't be surprised if we scored in this game. But yeah, then it's about what can we do in terms of keeping them out. And I don't want us to drop deeper and deeper slowly and then they suddenly just manage to break us down and score. It's basically, can we transition well? And can we deal with them well enough in terms of our rest defence and in terms of just when we're under the cosh and making it so that maybe their fullbacks don't overlap and break us down really easily out wide as well. That's another area of big concern for me.
I'm going to keep my answer simple for this one and just say the game will be won or lost because Chelsea will have good players and we don't have our best players playing, so Chelsea will win the game.
Yeah.
And I made a prediction which I shouldn't have done, but that's
you didn't the way say a scoreline. You're fine. You get away with that.
Is your mic just come out, Adam? It's very blurred.
Is it all right now?
It is better now, yeah. So I think with that, I will bring an end to the Chelsea preview. Adam, could you just remind people where they can find the Patreon?
That is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Lovely stuff. So we will be back at some point this week. I think we're going to be previewing Huddersfield on Thursday and we will talk about the Chelsea game. We're not going to do a full review, but I imagine we'll talk about it in a bit of depth on that one. But until then, I will say once again, thank you very much, John, for coming on, if you are listening, which I doubt you are at this point. But thank you for coming on, and please come on again whenever you have chance. And Adam, you were also here. Thank you for coming on the pod.
Yeah, thank you. I liked this trip down memory lane, me, you and John on a pod again. It's genuinely been maybe two and a half years, 100%. It's been that long.
Yeah, it was probably sometime in 2022, like you said, maybe even 2021, I don't know. But it was good. No, very much enjoyed it. And as always, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.